This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, I've looked over the stuff from the Supreme Court and just a real quick summary of what's going on. The Supreme Court, first of all, the Trump travel ban was issued as basically an emergency thing that would only last for 4 months. And so the Supreme Court is essentially saying, with the exception of people, first of all, this applies to Libya, Iran, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, these six countries. And the Supreme Court is saying that with the exception of people in those countries who have a relative in the United States or a relationship with somebody in the United States, you know, they're engaged to somebody or they're married to somebody or they have a relative, or who are students at U.S. universities who have already been admitted to those universities, with the exception of those people who were not allowed under the Trump executive order or travel ban or whatever. I don't believe this passed Congress, but I could be wrong. But in any case, they said that with the exception of that, we're going to allow the enforcement of this thing. And we're not going to hear the case until October. And that's June, July, August, September, October. That's 4 months from now. And so we're basically fully expecting that the administration will have had their 120 days to figure out what they need to do, and they will have replaced this with something that's more long-lasting. And so we're expecting that when we decide to hear this case, it won't even be a case anymore. So we'll see if that's the case. In the meantime, Clarence Thomas, Sam Alito, and Neil Gorsuch, told you he was the most right-wing of anybody on the court, all said, you know, we shouldn't even be offering exceptions and temporary stays. We should simply say, you know, Trump said it, it's law, that's it. Right? So that's what's going on with the Supreme Court and Trump's travel ban. And then this church-state decision, the Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Missouri, wanted to access a state program that was put into place and funded in the state of Missouri in order to theoretically, in order to help children stop being injured on playgrounds. Now, whether that's really the goal of this, or whether the goal, or whether a company that sells shredded tire bits lobbied for this, I don't know. I'm inclined to think the latter, because shredded tires, you know, are fairly full of poisons. I mean, you know, that this is, it used to be disposing of tires was considered disposing of toxic waste, right? So they figured out a way to dispose of this toxic waste. You shred it up into little pieces and put it on kids' playgrounds so that when they fall, they're hitting a tire instead of a piece of gravel. Well, the solution to the gravel problem is simply to make the gravel thick enough. You make it a couple inches thick, you don't have that problem. But in any case, the state was offering to buy the shredded tires and give them to schools. And this church was running a school, and they said, hey, what about us? And the Supreme Court said, yeah, you're eligible for this program, too, even though the state constitution says that no state money can go to any kind of church. So, you know, chipping away, arguably, at that so-called wall of separation between church and state, to use Thomas Jefferson's phrase. A couple of other things that I wanted to share with you. I mentioned this early on, Grover Norquist, this morning. He tweeted, this is hysterical, and I retweeted this if you want to find the thread, although you can find it on Grover Norquist on his timeline as well, just easily. He says, how Republicans are born. Daughter, 8, has been saving up to buy her first guitar. Found it for $35. She had 35 exact. Then, ellipsis, sales tax. And the responses are just hysterical. This cannot be what Grover Norquist was expecting. Let me just read you some of these. John McNulty says, so you intentionally let your daughter walk in without money for tax so you could give an 8-year-old a speech about why government is evil? Grover Norquist replies, says, no. And so Laura Silverman says, you didn't know about sales tax? At that point, Grover Norquist just stops replying. Eric Garland says, bro, $41 wouldn't have done it either. Please consult a guitarist for more information. In other words, you think you can buy a guitar for $35? He goes on to say, seriously, I will give her my Mexi Telly with Seymour Duncan's and a pro setup if you will stop telling her that sales tax ruined this. He says, I'm not fooling. She can have this guitar if you'll renounce this argument. And he plays a clip of him playing the guitar. So then Tom Herron says, why not just have retailers list the full tax, the full price tax included, like several other industrialized countries? Actually, this is the law all across Europe. If you go to any of the European Union countries or the Eurozone countries, I'm not sure if it's a European Union or a Eurozone, but any country that uses the euro, I know for sure. You know, when it says something is $3.99 or €3.99, it is $3.99 because that price includes the tax. We could do that in the United States. I mean, states could mandate that. That's not a big deal. It's an interesting idea. Anyhow, John Schwartz jumps in. Did you mention that you drove her to the guitar store on roads that were partly funded by sales taxes? Charles Gava says, in a car that only has seat belts preventing you from being badly injured in the event of a crash due to taxpayer-funded regulations. And Steve J says, or that those same taxes pay for emergency services that will respond if you do get in an accident. And then Holly Taggart says, and fix potholes that reduce the chance that we will have accidents. And then Shannon Copeland says, and use traffic lights that are installed by municipalities that greatly reduce the risk of death while driving. And then Keith says, and using sidewalks that are paid by the city with taxpayer dollars. And then Liberal says, and police that protect her from being robbed of her cash. And then Yerba Dog says, and firefighters and EMTs to provide emergency medical services that are paid for in part by sales tax. And then Pete Forrester says, you didn't teach your daughter about a fundamental aspect of American life that we see a dozen times a day. Maybe she needs a better parent. And then Jimmy Failson says, I agree, Grover. Republican policies only make sense if you're a small child. And then Ferdinand Chubb said, if we were able to send and you were able to send this tweet during due to government research and investment in the Internet. And then Jimmy Failson says, join us next week when Grover's woke daughter bemoans how she can't afford a new phone because there's no textile mill for her to work in. And then Nate says, in your ideal world, she would have $35 for the guitar and $75 to pay the warlords at every checkpoint you encounter on the road to the store. And then Seth Samuel says, your entire career is based on an idea you had in junior high school, Grover, because you never bothered the world to learn that the world could be complex. And then Shock Doctrine says, does he have a real job that produces any product or service? And Zach Belcher says, does appearing on Fox News count? And DJ Finney says, no, it doesn't. It's just, it's hysterical. So I refer you to Grover Norquist. Another seemingly hysterical, but not, because it involves somebody getting shot and other people being murdered. In St. Louis, there was a 35-year-old police officer who heard a commotion near his home, grabbed his service weapon to help his fellow officers. I mean, literally, this was happening right by his house. The police were stopping somebody, a couple of people who were two teenagers, actually. One suspect was shot in the ankle and arrested. Another was arrested for trying to run. A third was still being sought. So this off-duty cop runs up to the two on-duty officers who say, get on the ground. You know, he's got a gun in his hand. And then they recognized him and said, oh, you're one of us. You know, stand up. Come on over. So he stands up and he's walking toward these two cops. And another cop shows up. And the other cop notices that the guy in street clothes with a gun in his hand who's walking toward the other two police officers is black. So he pulls out his gun and shoots him. The lawyer for the guy who was shot, his name is Rufus J. Tate Jr. That's the lawyer's name. We don't have the names of any of the cops right now. But Tate told the station, the St. Louis Fox affiliate, KTVI, told the station his client identified himself to the on-duty officers and complied with their commands. He questioned the white officer's account, according to police. This is the guy who came and shot the off-duty officer, the off-duty black officer. He questioned the white officer's account, according to police, that he shot the officer because he feared for his safety. Tate said, in the police report you have so far, there's no description of a threat he received. So we have a real problem with that. But this has been the national discussion for the past 2 years. There is this perception that a black man is automatically feared. And then they point to other examples. In 2009, 25-year-old New York City police officer Omar Edwards, who was black, was shot and killed by a white officer on a Harlem street while in street clothes. He had a service weapon out and was chasing a man who had broken into his car, police said. A year earlier in the suburb of White Plains, New York, a black off-duty Mount Vernon police officer was killed by a Westchester County policeman while holding an assault suspect at gunpoint. In Providence, Rhode Island, an off-duty black police sergeant, Cornell Young Jr., was accidentally killed by two uniformed white colleagues in 2000 while he was trying to break up a fight on a parking lot. I remember interviewing a former D.C. police officer. I'm blanking on his last name at the moment. His first name is Ron, but he's been a regular on our TV show a few times. Ron Hampton, yeah. Thank you, Troy. Yeah, that's right. You've worked on the TV show. You've met Ron. Good guy. Good guy. He's retired now. In fact, I think Ron's probably in his 70s. But he, you know, when he was on our TV show, he told me just horror stories about how being a black police officer on the D.C. Metro Police Force, before, during, and after the time that it became well integrated, was just, you know, he was just continuously subjected to everything from overt racism to micro humiliations. And so, you know, I'm sure every single one of these black cops thought, hey, I finally made it, right? I finally get white privilege because I'm now a police officer. I'm at the pinnacle of the power structure that oppresses black people. So I'm in good shape, right? Bang! Ooh! White cop kills him anyway. In this case, he wasn't killed. He was just shot in the arm. But this should just tell us all everything we need. What's going on?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We got a serious police culture problem in this country. We need to solve. Europe has solved it, by the way. We need to look at it. We'll be back. And welcome back. Sean in Columbus, Ohio, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind?
Hey, can you hear me? I was just headset messing stuff up.
I hear you just fine.
I hear a lot of talk. I watch a lot of shows, liberal, right, you know, alt-right, Nazi, you know, and SJW type stuff. I pretty much watch it all. And I see basically all these leaders, especially in the media, they want everyone divided. And, you know, you got the liberals, you'll name Soros and Koch, and then you got the alt-right Nazi Republicans. They'll name, they'll name the Soros, and you'll name the Koch and Adelson.
Yeah, except that, George Soros is giving nothing close, nothing. He's given nothing close to what the Kochs and Adelson... I mean, the Kochs just committed $400 to the next election cycle and $400 million, $900 million to the last election cycle. George Soros, you know, if you're lucky, George Soros has passed out $5 or $10 million. He is not a major donor. He just happens to be Jewish. So he is the guy that on the right they always point to. But he's not a major donor of progressive causes.
Oh, yeah. But I mean,
and neither is Barbara Streisand, frankly.
Rothschild, I believe. That those are distractions.
You know, see, yeah, another nice Jewish name, which is, it's not a distraction. This is core to their strategy. It's the other. It's blacks, it's Jews. You know, that's what the right wingers are all about, Sean.
Well, the oligarchs, there's more than three of them, you know. There's Mikhail Levin. Do you still work for RT?
I don't know who he is.
Mikhail Levin, he's the owner and inventor of RT. See, if we look at the media, there's about, in America, you can name six people who control every single person's mind in America.
Yeah. Sean, you're wandering. I'm sorry. This is not a level of conspiracy theory that I'm comfortable engaging in. So I'm gonna move along here. Public Citizen. Actually, there's a better article here. This is in the New York Times by Peter Baker. Can Trump destroy Obama's legacy? The president seems determined to define his time in office by demolishing what his predecessor did. I found this really interesting to find it in the New York Times, because this is something that I've been talking about in this program, about the Reagan Legacy Project and how the modern day version of the Reagan Legacy Project is the Obama Destroy His Legacy Project. And I believe it's real. Now, nobody has made an announcement. Nobody knows who might be in charge of it. They, you know, it may not even be specifically organized, but it is clearly the project is to deny President Obama any legacy whatsoever. Peter Baker writing about this, and I don't know, maybe he listens to our program. He says, when the judgment of history comes, former President Barack Obama might have figured he would have plenty to talk about. His health care program, trade deal with Asia, climate change, diplomatic opening to Cuba. But 5 months after leaving office, Mr. Obama watches mostly in silence as his successor takes a political sledgehammer to his legacy. Rarely has a new president appeared so determined not just to steer the country in a different direction, but to actively dismantle what was established before his arrival. Hope Hicks, the director, White House director of strategic communications, says of Trump, he hasn't dismantled everything, and I don't know that that's exactly what he's looking to do. Right. We'll get back to this one. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Chris, I want to play this Rob Portman ad, this Lethal Lunchboxes ad. I got an email from Rob Weissman this morning, the head of Public Citizen, a group that Ralph Nader started back 50 years ago. And he says, big business, the Trump administration, big business's top priority is to use the Trump administration not just to roll back Obama-era health, safety, and environmental regulations, but to make it nearly impossible for future administrations to add new regulatory protections. This bill, this piece of legislation before the United States Senate, would give giant corporations the power to block food safety standards, to block clean water protections, to block toy safety rules, to block workplace safety protections, and to block rules designed to stop bank ripoffs, and more. The bill would force government agencies to undergo 53 additional procedural steps before issuing a new regulation and give corporations the right to sue over each one of those 53 steps. On top of that, the bill directs agencies to focus not on how they can best protect the American public, but instead the agencies are supposed to make their top priority the impact on corporate profits. This bill, which Public Citizen is calling the License to Kill Act, is actually named the Regulatory Accountability Act. It is before the Senate right now, and its main champion is U.S. Senator Rob Portman, Republican of Ohio. So Public Citizen has released a 30-second ad that they are playing in Ohio about this piece of legislation. Here it is. Check this out.
We care about what goes into our children's lunch. But Senator Rob Portman sponsored a bill that could prevent essential safeguards of our food and our drinking water, prevent safety standards on everything from baby cribs to toys. If Senator Portman has his way, it could be nearly impossible to protect our families from tainted, contaminated foods or dangerous products. Call Senator Portman and tell him that we didn't vote for lethal lunchboxes.
That's 202-224-3533 is Rob Portman's phone number. Or you can just call the Congressional Switchboard and ask for him, 202-224-3121. That's pretty amazing. I mean, that's, in fact, it's even beyond amazing. That's disgusting. But, you know, it's Republicans, and they're dancing to the tune of the Koch Network, which is a bunch of billionaires who want to have, you know, who think that America is their sandbox, right? We've got the billions. We got more money than the bottom half of America. Why should we care, you know, what, about democracy and what people want? And, you know, say, let's protect our children. Come on. We're billionaires. We don't have to worry about that. Amazing. Did you just say 1 minute? Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll continue my rant then. Yeah. And then Peter Baker here in the New York Times. Can Trump destroy Obama's legacy? This is interesting because I've been talking about this for about 3 weeks now since it kind of dawned on me that it looks to me like what Donald Trump is doing is taking everything that Barack Obama accomplished, whether he cares about it or not. Donald Trump doesn't care about Cuba. In fact, if anything, Donald Trump would probably, if it was just him as a, you know, as a businessman slash president, he would probably prefer that Cuba be open for tourism if he can put a Trump hotel down there and casino, right? I mean, you know, it's made for Donald Trump, right? But he doesn't have a Trump hotel down there. Now, he does in the UAE, so he's siding with them against Qatar and Al Jazeera, but he doesn't in Cuba, so, you know. But anyhow, this, you know, can Trump destroy Obama's legacy? So I see this thing, and I'm like, this is the opposite of the Reagan Legacy Project. And Peter Baker seems to have figured it out too, or else he listens to our program, and wrote, you know, a great piece in the New York Times on the 23rd, last Friday, that you should check out. Can Trump destroy Obama's legacy? And the answer appears to be, yeah, maybe he can. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with your calls after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Lloyd, listening on Sirius XM in Calumet City, Illinois. Hey, Lloyd, what's up?
Hey, Tom, what you've been saying this morning kind of feeds right into my thought process. And I thought that my Democratic brothers and sisters should change their concept in thinking. And whenever they say the word Republican, they need to attach or substitute the word corporation. Examples, we could say the corporation today voted on a bill to reduce the taxes for the rich and famous. And because that's exactly what we're up against.
Or how about the corporate Republicans?
Yeah, the whole Republican Party is nothing but a corporation.
Yeah.
And as you indicated the other day, the 13 guys that went in the back room there and voted on this secret bill, each and every one of them had contributions to their campaigns from the corporations.
Yeah, to the tune of $400,000 in the case of Mitch McConnell. Lloyd,
exactly.
You know, I think it's time to start calling these guys what they are. You know, the economic royalists, I called them that in my last book. That was FDR's phrase. The robber barons, that was Teddy Roosevelt's phrase. I think maybe it's time to go back to robber barons. That's really what they are, these guys.
Well, we need to put the true tag on them, because as long as we just say Republicans, then we think that we're talking about the guy down the street. Oh, he's a hell of a nice guy. He has different opinions, but he's a Republican.
Right.
And we don't seem to really address who these people are and what their objectives are.
Yeah.
So I think that we do need to tag them with the appropriate name so that we actually realize who we are up against.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I find MSNBC's process of trying to normalize this with Greta Van Susteren and Nicole Wallace and Hugh Hewitt and everything just, you know, and Joe Scarborough, bizarre. Anyhow, Lloyd, thank you. Amen. Adam in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, Adam, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Yeah, hey, what I want to talk about is I'm a kind of a middle-class guy, and I'm a private pilot, and whenever you do
that, me too.
Get a, yeah, well, that's why I found that out last week when I was listening to you on the radio. But you kind of get an unusual look into the life of rich and powerful people when you go to FBOs, the real rich ones.
Mm-hmm.
And a perfect example of that is...
FBOs, for people who don't know what you're talking about, are fixed-based operators. FBOs are basically the private shops at airports where private pilots can check in and buy charts and store their planes fuel, and get gas and stuff like that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and it's some of them are very, very nice. And there's one called Atlantic here in Oklahoma City at Wiley Post Airport.
Yeah.
And I live near there. And so me being aviation, that I drive through the airport quite often and see what kind of planes are on the apron. And the other day I was driving through there, and it was 2 or 3 days in a row, and there were some black SUVs and a lot of Oklahoma City PD officers doing security. And I could never figure out what's going on. There was no plane there. Well, it was a Saturday, and I saw the big private jet sitting there, and the engines are running, so I waited for it to taxi, and as it taxied away, I saw two of the patrol officers leave, and they went to the public terminal, and so I asked what's going on, and they said, well, the Venezuelan president was in town. I'm sorry, not the Venezuelan, Guatemalan president was in town opening up an embassy.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, that's cool, and so I ran the tail number on the plane, and it came back to Wells Fargo Bank. They had flown in the Guatemalan president into Oklahoma City.
Really?
And it just kind of shows you, you know, how influential the banks are with international governments, you know?
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Adam, thank you for that. That's, you know, I can't corroborate it, but it's fascinating. Thank you. And keep flying safely. Patrick in Los Angeles. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Yes, Tom. A couple things. Pete Trump, Speaker.
Thank you.
A couple things. California killed the single-payer health care program at 5 p.m. on Friday afternoon.
Oh, I have a reason why, Patrick. I've been digging through this, and actually, it was I think it was somebody in our chat room. Let me just take a quick look and see if that's where I got it. Yeah, I think it was. The problem, yeah, here it is. Jerry Brown, California single-payer health bill shelf for the remainder. The reason why is because back in the Howard Jarvis era, back in the Prop 13 era, the Republicans got a ballot initiative passed in California that requires a two-thirds vote of the Senate and the Assembly in order to raise taxes. And in order to fund single-payer health care, you have to substantially raise taxes. And so in order to get this bill passed, the guys who wrote the bill did not write a funding mechanism into it, so it wouldn't require a two-thirds vote. It could pass with a simple majority. So it'd be more like a statement of principle. And apparently, now, you know, whether, I don't know for sure whether that's the reason why Jerry Brown and the Speaker of the Assembly have decided to put it on hold for a year, or if that's just the excuse, but that's being put out there. Anyhow, back to you.
Yeah, I just think the Friday afternoon thing is like, it's like the Washington dump just took place in Sacramento.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it was all done kind of secretly, very quietly, and everybody didn't find out about it until basically today.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, sir.
You're doing
wonderful work.
Thank you, Patrick. And let's all keep on this thing. We got to figure out what's going on here. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Hey, Tom, I wanted to express how disappointing this decision was by the Supreme Court over that church funding in Missouri. You know, you often use the term that a lot of these conservatives are really no different than the Taliban. And I don't know if you even know how right you are on that, because I've actually had to deal with the Taliban. And the thing is, you know, what we're talking about here is the wall of separation between church and state. If that goes away, it's really going to be hard to see a difference.
Yeah, the Taliban was the government of Afghanistan before we blew that up, and they now control about 70% of the territory of Afghanistan again. How did you deal with the Taliban?
Oh, when I was in Kandahar, they would do this thing where they would go out and they would hold courts in rural areas. Now there were Islamic courts, okay? And also,
right,
I should state for the record, I am an atheist, a lifelong atheist. But these courts, nobody minded. I mean, I knew Afghan policemen that would shoot a Taliban person. I mean, hated the Taliban, but they did not mind the Taliban holding these courts in these very rural, very hard to get to, very remote regions.
Right, because this, even though it's Sharia law, that the Taliban's version of which we and most Muslims around the world would probably not think was the most, you know, modern and civilized, at least it was law. And safety, security, and some sense of law and order are pretty important to people.
Yes, and if you look at it, all right, you look at this Russ Vought guy that Bernie questioned really hard about. You know, Russ Vought was over there at Wheaton College, who you know, he fired that woman for saying, you know, Christians should you know, care about Muslims or something. He fired that woman from that Christian community college. Well, Bernie really questioned him on the religious test thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he received a lot of, I mean, I thought it was really over-the-top criticism from conservatives, right? And if you look at it right now, that Vought guy is the deputy OMB. And right now, he's working to consolidate and reorganize power for Trump in the executive branch. See, this is how this is very similar to the way the Taliban works. If you ask the Taliban, are you a bad guy, any member of the Taliban, they are going to say no, Tom. I guarantee it.
Well, you ask that of any human on earth, and they're probably going to say no, Dave. You know, one man's terrorist and another man's freedom fighter. It's cliche, but it's more than often true.
Well, yeah, and I mean, they, you know, when you have this, when you have no separation of church and state, you essentially, you know, you're essentially, well, you're a theocracy.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have it. You're absolutely right. And this is something that scared the hell out of the founders and framers, because they had seen Massachusetts, which ran as a theocracy until it joined the Federation of States, until it joined the United States. You know, in Massachusetts, you could be arrested and put in jail for not going to church. You had to pay a tax that funded the churches in Massachusetts until the day that Massachusetts, you know, ratified the Constitution. So, you know, they were very concerned about it. Dave, I got to run. Thanks.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more after this break. We're also going to check in with Talk Media News. Stick around. Welcome back. Jerry in Dallas, Texas, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind today?
Well, this is the first time I've heard your program, and I'm enjoying it. But the reason I responded is your comments about the policeman shooting the black police officer who was in plain clothes.
Right.
My thought was, I don't know, I can't recall what city that was, but...
It was St. Louis.
St. Louis?
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on the police. I did serve in the Dallas Police Reserve way back in the 1960s, but I think the emphasis or the question should be, what kind of training did this fellow have, or what kind of training do they have in that department? And... not too long ago, when Obama was still president, there was talk about and all these shootings of black youth and by police officers and so on. There was talk about inadequate training or proper training by those local police departments, and there was some question about whether or not we ought to have a national training standards and things like that. I know we don't want to have a national police force in a democratic society, but there's a question about whether or not the training was adequate in some of these.
I agree, Jerry. I absolutely agree. I went through the Georgia Police Academy back in the day, back in the late 90s. I was licensed as a PI for 2 years. A very good friend of mine at the time. Was a former Southern sheriff who ran a private detective agency. He got me into and through the police academy. In fact, he went through it with me. And, so I have a sense of police culture. I've had interactions with the police over the years. And I lived in Europe for a year. And I interacted with the police in Germany 3 or 4 times. Traffic stops. I had left my car unlocked and I got a ticket for it, and I had to get out of the police station and get back my registration because they took it out of the car and took it to the police station. But the police in Europe are just unfailingly polite. But that said, and they very rarely shoot anybody. But they're also, you've got to have a college degree to even be considered to be a police officer in most European countries. They pay really well. It is not just a job. It is a career with an excellent retirement benefit, excellent pay. And, of course, everybody in the country already gets free college and has free health care, whether they're with the police or not. And here in the United States, we are not funding our police departments the way we should. And too much of the funding is going to toys rather than the boys, the toys for boys, boys and girls, let's say. But it's going for equipment rather than training. I'm with you, Jerry.
Another point that I heard afterwards was your book on attention deficit disorder. I'm a high school dropout myself. I eventually went back and finished and actually became a teacher. But there's a lot to be said for... the relationship between teachers and students. All it takes is, for students who may be undergoing some sort of difficulty at home.
No, I got it. Jerry, I'm sorry, we're out of time. When the music starts, you got 10 seconds. Thank you, Jerry. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Ellen Ratner's brilliant new book about making your life work in the workplace. Victoria Jones on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
I hope you're loving what you do.
Oh, yes.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, before I even get to the Supreme Court and to healthcare, I'd just like to give you an update here from the White House, because, of course, we have a White House press briefing coming up any minute now. It is yet another off-camera briefing.
I have a theory about those,
yes.
If I may.
Yes.
My theory is that Donald Trump is such a narcissist that he is unhappy that Sean Spicer is getting more television time than he is. And so he said, stop doing those things on camera. I want to be the face of this administration. What do you think?
Well, that's possibly true, but it could be belied by the other event today.
Okay.
Because it is a very big news day for reasons we'll get to. And that is that later this afternoon, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is coming to the White House for his first meeting with President Trump, a very big democracy around the world, India, at a major meeting. And in the Rose Garden later on this afternoon, the two leaders will give statements. And as you know, when a major leader comes, usually the two would give statements and then take what's called a two and two. They'll each take two questions from members of their media, which usually ends up being about three questions, and from two members of the media. President Trump is breaking with that tradition today and is only issuing statements. He's not taking any questions from members of the media on probably one of the biggest news days.
Yeah. Well, he's... this guy just has an absolute disdain for the media. And he views them as either the enemy or as dummies to be manipulated, as far as I can tell. So that doesn't surprise me. It's unfortunate, though. It's not a good thing for our republic.
No.
Anyhow, what else is going on?
I just wanted people to be aware that when they see that in the Rose Garden, just be aware that something very important is actually not happening.
Right.
That the press are not getting to ask questions.
Right.
So the Supreme Court is letting a limited version of President Trump's ban on travel from six mostly Muslim countries go into effect, which is sort of a partial victory for Trump in what has been a huge controversy in his presidency. So the justices are going to hear full arguments in when they come back from their long summer vacation in October. But in the meantime, the court said today that his ban on visitors from Sudan, Yemen, Somalia, Iran, Syria, and Libya, it can go into effect as long as those visitors lack what's being called a credible claim of a bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the United States.
Right. In other words, college students who've been admitted to college, people who are coming over to get together with their family or spouse or relative or whatever. Now, in legal circles, there is a theory that what's going on here, based on the way that this ruling was written, is that what the Supreme Court really intends to take on is venue shopping. Have you heard about that?
I've not heard about that.
The practice of venue shopping, there's places in Texas where there's judges that have been elected with big money from corporations, and they know that if they sue in those particular venues, that they can usually win. A corporation will usually win. There are other venues where there's judges who are very favorable to consumers consumer lawyers tend to sue in those venues, knowing that they'll have a good hearing there. During the Obama administration, there were a bunch of venues that were run by right-wing judges, and those were the ones that were used by right-wing groups to do the challenges to Obamacare that made it all the way to the Supreme Court. And now the ACLU used left-wing venues, or that's the argument made, the Fourth and Ninth Circuit, smaller parts of the circuit, used more left-wing favorable venues to get this ban done. And then what the Supreme Court wants to do is stop not stop venue shopping altogether, but stop the justices in these venues from issuing nationwide bans and get them to limit their efforts to individual states or municipalities and put a crimp in this operation. I don't know if it's anything to it or if it's just the latest conspiracy theory out of a bunch of lawyers here in D.C., but I've seen it in two different places.
That's actually very interesting because there has been talk about venue shopping in other contexts.
Yeah.
So that actually would not surprise me. And in fact, I think there was a case about venue shopping.
And it would be the Supreme Court essentially asserting that they are the only real national court.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's very interesting indeed.
How dare you infringe on our privileges?
Yeah, that's interesting. People are saying that this partial enforcement that would enable people who have some kind of contact here to come in would impact refugees the worst.
Right. Yeah.
So
because they don't have family members.
Exactly. Many of them don't. Also, the Supreme Court ruled today that churches have the same right as other charitable groups to seek state money for new playground surfaces and other non-religious needs by 7-2. The justices sided with Trinity Lutheran Church in Missouri, which wanted a grant to put a soft surface on its preschool playground, and the church was denied any money, even though its application was ranked 5th out of 44 submissions. And the dissents were Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And
is this going to cause 30 states to actually have to amend their constitutions now to say that state money can be given to churches?
I believe it would impact about 30 states, yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes. So there were a number of other Supreme Court decisions. I mean, we could go on about the Supreme Court, or I could move on to other topics, because there are a lot of other things.
Up to you.
Okay, let's move on, because we've got health care. The Senate leadership is releasing another version of the health care bill today, a revised version that adds a continuous coverage requirement to the draft bill they unveiled last week. It didn't include that last week, and they realized that. They knew it, and they knew they needed to get that in. So the new version adds a six-month waiting period, which Democrats are criticizing as being unfair. Basically, if you lose coverage for more than 2 months, you will have to wait 6 months to get new coverage.
Before you can buy health insurance?
Basically, under the Affordable Care Act, if you lost coverage and didn't promptly use a special enrollment period, you had to wait until the next open enrollment period.
Right, which is every November or December, roughly.
Right. The Senate provision adds a six-month waiting period on top of that. The later of either 6 months after his or her application for insurance or the first day of the next plan. Yeah.
This is insane. We need national single-payer health care.
So
Medicare for all. This is nuts.
So it's interesting. And Vox has an interesting story about how there is a piece in it, and I haven't even had a chance to read this properly, that hasn't been looked at very closely, a little notice provision that could drive up premiums for small business health plans.
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, you know, they're doing away with all these government subsidies. It's gonna mean that all the costs are gonna fall on consumers, and which means that consumers rather than government are gonna be subsidizing this massive, insanely profitable for-profit industry that pays, you know, its CEOs as much as $1 billion in the case of United Healthcare. It's incredible. Victoria Jones with Talk Media News. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.